Good morning. Somebody lowered the chair on me. This is like frightening. I can see the top of the counter, but I can't get there. There we go. All right. It is a Friday. No surprise. 8th of March. You're not Sean.
I'm not Sean.
What happened here?
He had a little conflict this morning, so I'm here to fill in.
Oh.
Yeah. But don't complain.
Oh, I shan't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can say so many things that get me in trouble right now. I'll just kind of let her fly. So, mystery guest, sign in.
My name's Talia. I'm the Community Risk Reduction Specialist with Humboldt Bay Fire.
And you don't want your last name known just because somebody might know that you were on here?
Could be.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Are you ready for your question that makes you really feel smart?
Of course.
All right. What's the origin of a 21-gun salute?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
You want to take a shot at it?
Clever.
Yeah, well, it's about as good as it's going to get today, I think.
Maybe honoring soldiers after war, after they come back.
That's okay. Fine.
That's a good guess.
I mean, you could fake it.
Yeah.
Say there were only 21 guns in the gunnery.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
And somebody was attacking, so they all shot them.
There you go.
It doesn't have to be legit. All salutes are signals of voluntary submission. Early warriors simply placed their weapons on the ground. But when guns came along, the ritual of firing off or emptying cannons was done to illustrate to approaching foreign dignitaries that they had nothing to fear. In 1688, the Royal Navy regulated the number of guns to be used in saluting different ranks. For a prime minister, 19 guns should be used, but for royalty, or heads of state, the salute should be done with?
21 guns.
Bingo.
Nice.
See? Yeah. Sorry, you don't get partial credit on that
That's
at all.
That's okay. I'll take that. It's early.
Fair enough. Well, it seems like the department's been halfway busy with fires and medicals and all the, at least car crashes with the weather. What's it been like inside the building?
Definitely. It has been pretty busy. Busy inside and outside the office in the field. Like you said, lots of traffic collisions due to the weather lately. That's been a big one. Structure fires, mutual aid calls. Arcata's been very busy. We've been heading out there to help them out a lot. It's been quite wild.
Yeah. Too much fun, huh?
Just a little bit.
Yeah,
enough fun.
Yeah. So well, you got the weather related stuff, but what about with the time change? Do anything?
Not really. Not necessarily for us. Obviously, the crews that are on shift that day lose an hour of sleep. But
yeah, they get
hopefully,
hammered.
Yeah. Hopefully, it doesn't affect them too much. They might need a midday safety nap.
Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah.
A safety nap?
A safety nap, most definitely.
Huh. I've never heard that phrase before. That's kind of cool. Somehow, some way, that makes sense. Safety nap. If I could figure out how to take a nap, then I could kind of put that label onto it and have some.
Well, if you're up like 5 times after midnight, it's a little easier to take a nap during the day.
Tell you what, sweetheart, that happens with age.
Yeah.
Knock it off, will you?
Fair enough.
Yeah. Geez, you're sure you don't want to be known, huh? Oh, my. What is the biggest surprise that you've run into since you've been on the department?
The biggest surprise.
Maybe not surprise. How about unknown?
Biggest unknown? I have a background in the fire service, so it's not necessarily unknown. It's just.
It would be like me stepping in.
Yeah, there you go.
You had some of the volunteers and
definitely,
stuff.
Definitely, yeah. It's just a completely, it's a different world, volunteer versus career. And I see, you know, all the different aspects, working in the office and like going out on the in the field, and then, you know, dealing with the public in a different way, dealing with the public in the PIO role, in the community risk reduction role, where there's a lot of public education, public outreach. And so that was something that has come with time, but I think I'm getting better. I'm doing better at that.
I suppose that most of us outside looking in would not understand the distinction.
Yeah.
Between the two. But when you start getting into some of those other areas of your responsibility.
Definitely.
Okay.
There's a lot of avenues in the fire service, and people don't even realize, you know, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, not necessarily in the engines, on duty, on shift. Like, there's a lot of other aspects. Like, everybody that's in the office makes the fire department run smoothly, on top of, you know, our line personnel that are out there being the heroes.
Yeah, there's still the business of fire.
Yes, 100%. We are still a business, and we still, you know, serve our public in different forms.
So risk reduction, I would think, could take on a whole variety of definitions.
It sure does.
Because of the size of the department being as, I almost said tiny, but I'll say tiny, compared to some of the larger departments, does that limit the scope of what you have to do? Or does that mean you just have more under your job description?
It's a little bit of both. I do, you know, take on a lot as far as outreach for the public. There is only one of me, obviously. We have a couple of other people that do some community outreach. Most of those people are on engines, and they do, you know, things like school details, or they'll go out, they'll do the perilous plunge. Just something to get out into the community. But
they're not the ones who go head first, though.
They might be. If you get
put
lucky,
a fire
they might
hat
go
on top
there.
And go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, extra protection up top. But yeah, there's a lot of avenues to it, and I don't mind the public outreach. I like the public education, you know, getting out there and describing to the fire department describing to the public what the fire department does. And it's really nice to see the public interaction from a different aspect, not an emergency situation.
Now, are most of those like the school classroom?
We
kinds
do a lot
of things,
schools.
Or is there different elements?
We do a lot. We do a lot of school stuff, and we were just at Cal Poly Humboldt doing their career fair, and we were pushing our cadet program out into the public, and we got a lot of good interest from them. And so we do other things.
But did you get conversions?
We tried. We sure tried. We do CPR classes. We do safety inspections on businesses. All kinds of other things. We do fire extinguisher trainings. There's a lot of public outreach that we can do besides just, you know, going to school and letting kids see the fire engine, even though that is a lot of fun for us and for the
whether
kids.
You're at Humboldt or whether you're at Grand Elementary.
100%.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with the mysterious Talia from Humboldt Bay Fire.
Talia.
What'd I say?
Talia. It's okay. It happens all the time. On
Talia.
The daily.
Fine. You're even more mysterious now.
You gotta keep it that way.
Yeah. Okay. Not the volunteer program, not the intern program, but you guys have got, you've evolved that into a different approach. What is the concept behind trying to find out if people want to or qualify for being a firefighter?
Yeah, so we've started a new program within the last year, our cadet program, and it's basically geared towards younger individuals who have that interest in the fire service but might not have their certifications. They don't have their firefighter one. They might not have their EMT. It's designed for us to help them, for us to give them the training that they need to get that firefighter one, to get that EMT certification. And at the end of the 2-year program, our goal in the perfect world would be to hire them for a career. So far, it's going really well. We have a couple of really good, dedicated cadets.
Do you need a super large class size?
Or no, not necessarily.
Two onesies, twosies kind of thing.
Yeah, right now we only have, I think, 3 cadets. And So we have some program managers that are doing this. And basically the cadets are required to put in a certain amount of hours per quarter, certain amount of drills per quarter. it's very flexible because a lot of these people are students. A lot of these people have full-time jobs. And so we
make have
it,
a life?
Oh, of course.
Can you be a firefighter and have a life?
Can you imagine that?
No.
So we try to make it flexible. We try to make it something that is feasible for people. And so far it's been good. We had a lot of interest lately come out of it, and we're hoping to get interviews in soon for that.
Ongoing, or do you, are there certain cycles that folks have to sign up
We're
for?
We're doing this as cycling. Our application period is just about to end, and hopefully we'll have interviews done by the end of spring, and then cadets for the rest of the year, and then once again, applications will open up beginning of the year, go through until about spring, and we'll keep doing that cycle.
So you said it's a two-year program?
It is. It's designed to be a two-year program, but the cadets do have the option to get it done sooner. If they happen to come in and they already have their EMT, that's great, and we would love that. And we could work with them on other things that they might need, that Firefighter One, and just training. Training the Humble Bay way, what we do, how we do things, and like show them the ropes.
That's what I would think, that if somebody's, let's say, going to school, okay, maybe they have afternoons off, you know, that they... If the interest is there and the desire is there, run them through a little bit quicker.
Definitely, and yeah.
You might end up with somebody a little bit sooner.
Yeah, 100%. And that would be great. That would be easier for us, easier for them. If they can get good, beneficial training out of it, then that's what we're here to give them.
So what are the things, what is the profile? Not that you're the HR gal. But what is the profile of what you're looking for?
We're just looking for dedicated people with good work ethic, people that are willing to put in the work, people that have that genuine interest in the fire service. But we'll take anybody over the age of 18 that's willing to work, willing to, you know, learn from us and take it seriously.
Are there programs for the office positions also, or are those a different breed of cat entirely?
It is kind of completely different. There is no form of internship or anything. This cadet program is basically an intern firefighter. So it is not a paid position. We're going to train you. We're going to give you all the tools you need. There really isn't anything like that for the office admin side. We don't necessarily have the need for intern positions in the office right now. But that's not to say that in the future we might not.
Yeah, hopefully the turnover isn't that much.
We're lucky enough to not have that high of a turnover in the office, in the admin side. We're pretty lucky with the people that we have. Most of our people have been around for quite some time.
Or they're in City Hall administration. I know she listens, so. Is there an age element to this? I mean, you've indicated school.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what
over,
you want.
Yeah, 18 and over is what we're going for.
Mid-20s,
yeah. We're willing to work with people. We've had people, you know, in their 30s apply for the cadet program. And if that's where they're starting their fire service journey, then that's fine. They have to pass, you know, a background check. There is an interview process. So they do have to go through all those steps, and we do select a certain amount of cadets. So that's up to the panel. That's up to the program manager. And they're going to have, you know, their mantra of what they're looking for and what they don't want. So
their
I
macho?
Mantra.
Mantra. Oh.
So.
Which kind of brings up, is this a guy thing only?
No.
Is this a gal thing? Is it a combo? I mean,
definitely not. We actually had a lot of interest at the Cal Poly Career Fair, mostly from females. I'd say 80-20 was females at the career fair. We're always willing and able to work with anybody. We right now only have one female as a line personnel. We do have some females in the admin side, but we would love to expand that to more females. Cadets, great. We have a lot of females on our volunteer dive team, which is great. And we see a lot of that female interest in the fire service nowadays.
They're jumping in the bay?
Jumping in the bay for the volunteer dive team. That could be a good training.
My brother used to dive, and he talked about how murky and mucky.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's not like the Caribbean where you see all the nice little orange fish going by.
So I take it you're not going to be jumping in the bay tomorrow?
No, I'm going to be here tomorrow morning. I got stuff to do. He doesn't. Are you jumping?
Absolutely not.
You're there on the medical rescue side.
There we go.
All right, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Talia from Humboldt Bay Fire. Got it right this time, didn't I?
You did.
All right. I didn't see anything being thrown my direction. I figured I got close.
A plus.
For somebody who's interested in exploring the initial stages of fire service, where do they go? What do they do? I mean, can they just kind of pop in and shadow you? Hang out in the office, in the lobby, see what's going on.
Yeah.
Where do they go?
So we're lucky enough to have a couple options for them. Our ride-along program is great. It's very low commitment as far as, you know, showing up consistently to the fire station. You come in for a shift, basically. You jump on an engine with one of the crews, and you see what their day is like. You get to run calls with them. You eat lunch with them. You work out with them, you drill with them, whatever is on their day, whatever is on their agenda for that day, you get to join in with them. So you get to see what it's like. We get interest from all kinds of different people, people that are interested in the fire service and people that may not be interested in joining the fire service but are interested in what we do, like mental health specialists that want to work with first responders might do a ride-along. Just to see what it's really like to get.
Do you get
that.
A lot of DHHS people?
We have not. We have not.
You're planting the seed.
I have had recently an interest in that. This girl out in Fortuna.
Sense.
Yeah, and she wants to work with first responders mental health wise. And so I recommended to her, you know, you should jump on a ride along and see what their day is like.
I wonder if the kids going through it humbled.
Yeah, and
in that major area.
Definitely. And I think that's, you know, that's a big gap for first responders. Is there's a lot of mental health resources but not necessarily directed at first responders. And so it's good to see that there's, you know, there's avenues for that. There's people for that.
Well, and you guys are different than cops.
Correct. Correct. I hope so.
Well, that didn't take too long. And vice versa.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they deal with different stuff and we deal with different stuff. Sometimes it overlaps, but never in the same way. We see a lot of the same people, but not necessarily in the same situations.
Yeah, you're there for a different purpose.
100%.
Then you don't have to worry about traffic control.
We do sometimes,
unless
you know?
You're the first one
yeah,
there.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Now, there have been I almost said fair amount, but it's a more than normal car crashes out on the highways.
Definitely.
There was one I just happened to drive by. It was out by King Salmon. A car flipped over in the center lane. I saw the little red truck zipping around. I didn't know who it was, but thought, no, this is not a good time to show up and give somebody a hard time.
Yeah.
Even if it had been there an hour, it didn't matter.
Yeah, right.
And CHP was there, but then out here also by the Slough Bridge, there was a little action. Was it last week?
I believe last Monday.
Did somebody?
We
did,
had a
they
water
end up
rescue.
In the middle? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Somebody jumped in the water?
Yeah.
That was the bridge that they jumped off of?
Samoa? Is that where
you're from? No, out here, the Slough Bridge.
Oh, I'm not sure about that one.
Well, I may have been in town and just backed up that way. Yeah, the water rescue off the bridge.
We've seen an increase in that, too. You're talking about increase in traffic collisions. We've seen an increase in water rescues as well, which is interesting.
Not boats tipping over.
We have had those in the past. People either fall off their boat, you know, or their boat.
Like the kayak rental thing. Yeah, somebody goes stoop and they drop in. And
yeah. Which is, you know, perfect timing for water rescues, not necessarily because we want them to happen, but we just recently got our inflatable rescue boat. And so our boat operator program has been going, and we're...
It's bigger than a tub?
It is. It's bigger than a tub. Wing Inflatables provided it for us through a grant. And it's a great tool for us to be able to use because we do have a water rescue team and they typically jump out on some rescue boards. But the boat gives us a little bit more dynamic.
Without having to take out the fireboat, which is kind of a different utilization.
The fireboat is more...
Fires.
Fires, exactly. More geared towards a fire out in the ocean.
So did you get an engine with the boat?
We did not get an engine with the boat. But we do have a lot of pickup trucks around that we can tow the rescue boat out with, which is what we usually do.
Wait a minute.
So our
if you could tow a boat out into the water with a truck, you don't need the boat. You just have the truck, right? What am I missing here?
So we launch it off of the under the Samoa Bridge.
Right, the ramp, the boat ramp.
Yeah. Yep, and so we can either take the Dodge that we have through Humboldt Bay Fire or somebody's personal pickup truck. We'll back it into the water, and they're off.
So once you're in there, then what?
They just disconnect and
paddle.
They go. No, it does have a motor.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah,
it does have a motor. And our boat operators, we've got. I think right now we have 6 new boat operators. They all passed the program, and yeah, it's going well. They're doing a lot of good trainings on that, and
hopefully that's all.
Yes, hopefully
just the training.
Yes, hopefully we don't have too many water rescues.
So you got some of these folks. I guess if I use my words, I guess I'm kind of flavoring things a little bit. Folks that are deciding to jump, take swan dives, whatever it is, off of the bridges. There's got to be somebody asking them why.
Yeah, our hope is that...
Is it drug-related or is it other stuff?
Our hope is that they can get whatever kind of mental health support that they need. Obviously, after we get them out of the water, provide them with medical care, it moves on, you know, to the next entity, whether that's city ambulance taking them to the hospital or whatever that may be. Our hope is that they get whatever kind of specialized help that they need.
It's not like high school dares after the keg party.
No. Thankfully, no. We that
Whoops,
would not be.
Probably should have said
yeah,
that one.
Yeah,
huh? Well, okay.
Not a good idea.
Yeah. Don't connect that one to me.
Yeah. And the water is very, very cold. And hypothermia sets in.
20 minutes, 22 minutes, something like that?
Hypothermia, if the water is under 50, it can kick in within the first hour. If the water is under 40 degrees, under 30 degrees, it just keeps going down and down and down.
Yeah. If we don't get into the 30s too much.
Right, thankfully. Yeah. But if the water is under 40, it can kick in within 20 minutes.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought.
Yeah.
It was about a 20 minute, and then after that, things kind of start going down fast.
Definitely. And hypothermia, you know, it shuts your body down slowly, and it just, you stop working. We're lucky enough to have, you know, the Coast Guard close to us as well if we need extra assistance. And they have assisted us in the past with a lot of water rescues. Time is of the essence with that.
I was wondering, you know, other than the helicopter, if that's the way to get to wherever the location is fast on the bay, wouldn't they be the first players?
Not necessarily. Bay is our jurisdiction to an extent.
Hansel said yesterday that it's also the sheriff's. Sheriff is the law enforcement.
Definitely.
And you guys are
fire,
huh?
Yeah.
For the bay itself.
Correct.
Interesting.
The Coast Guard does come out with their boat, you know, if we need extra assistance. But most of the time we can make a quick rescue of it, get them either on our rescue board, on the rescue boat, and get them out of there.
And the Harbor District doesn't play in, I guess, emergency response?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't heard of them being on any of our incidents, any of our water rescues.
They're going to clear a cheer from the shore.
Right, yeah. I'm sure that they might help coordinate some of the directions we have to, you know, bring them to certain docks, depending on where the person is.
Or if the tugboat's needed, the fireboat.
Yeah,
boat, that
yeah.
Kind of
so
stuff,
they
yeah.
might they might help in certain situations.
But you haven't seen that happen
I have
yet.
Not seen that, personally. I
Which
can't say it hasn't happened.
It's probably pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean,
of
if you
course.
Haven't experienced it.
Yeah, if we don't need extra assistance, it's probably a good thing.
Yeah. So when one of those teams, is that a dive team? Is that water rescue team? What is
we
the
have a specific
vernacular?
Team for the water rescue. So water rescue team, they're all on-duty firefighters. Usually,
that's what I was thinking. So they stay as a unit at one of the fire stations?
No.
Or they come scrambling in from?
They are spread out. Usually we'll have 1 to 2 swimmers per engine. Just depending on the day, depending who's on shift. So each engine might have one swimmer. There might be an engine with two swimmers. It just depends on who's on shift that day. We have, I'm going to make a guess. This is not, maybe 8 to 10 rescue swimmers right now.
Oh, really? That many?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so they are spread out throughout the department, throughout the engines. And like I said, it just depends on who's on shift that day.
I would think that would be one of the more intriguing things.
Definitely. We have a lot of really interesting specialty teams. We've got our hazmat team. We've got our USAR team.
What's that one?
Urban search and rescue.
Oh, okay.
So anything disaster related, maybe a massive earthquake, urban search and rescue might help with that. And just like those, just like the water rescue team, those people are spread out. They're just all of our firefighters. There are captains, there are engineers, and they're spread out throughout the different engines.
I noticed one level there wasn't referenced. Starts with a C, ends with an F. Yeah. You don't show up, buddy. We talk about you. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:44.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:49. We're back talking shop with the mysterious Talia from Hubble Bay Fire. Maybe I can do a new business card for you.
Yeah, the mysterious?
The mysterious. Put a big question mark on it.
just Talia, that's it. Yeah. No other information.
No. Nothing else. Well, maybe the front door number at the fire department.
There you go. That's all you get.
That's it. And the logo. There you go. Who's this person? Yeah. What do they do? What is the biggest surprise when you're going out doing either the, I guess it would be called the risk reduction. I kind of think of it as the business visitations.
Yeah.
That people kind of go, oh.
I feel like a lot of people just don't have good information. Like a lot of people don't know certain things. We get even people like in residence, like in homes, give us calls and like, can you come look at, you know, the placement of my smoke detectors? Or can you come look at, you know, the placement of my fire extinguisher? And people just are not informed. They're not educated on, you know, proper places.
But they know that they need these things.
Right. And so they get
halfway home.
Yeah. And they get a lot of conflicting information about, you know, placement for smoke detectors or CO detectors or things like that. And
you mean the internet doesn't know all?
Exactly. And, you know, they get a lot of information off the internet. And so it's like very conflicting for them. And it is good for us to go out there and give them good information directly coming from, you know, the fire department.
Well, and it gets you inside the building, so.
Definitely.
If ever.
Yeah. And we see a lot of interesting things. We see a lot of things that are noteworthy just for us to know. Like you said, if we go in there in an emergency situation and there happens to be, you know, a hole in the roof, it's like, oh, that's something we want to know. Or, you know, their subfloor is rotting out. Like, it could be anything. Or it could be services not taken care of in a business, like a sprinkler system that hasn't been serviced in the last 8 years, 10 years. Like, that's something that we need to know, because if our crews go in there, it could be a hazard to them.
And you document all this stuff or put notes? Or
a lot of times we have what we call target hazards, places that are not necessarily in shambles, but places that could pose risks to the fire department.
Four dogs?
Dogs can be a problem. We do note certain things. We have like a daily plan of the day, and there's addresses on the back that could pose hazards, like things like aggressive dogs. Like that could be something that we note because we might go there often. And so the crews, knowing that, have a better way to approach that. Or just buildings that cause issues, like the jail. Like that is just a big building. And so it could be something that, you know, we're going to need a lot of resources for that. We're going to need a lot of help. We're going to need to know, have a plan going in.
So is that for your staff? Is that for dispatch?
It's for everybody. It's okay. A little bit of everything. Dispatch knows a lot of our target hazards. Our crews,
yeah, because I would think they're the same.
Yeah.
Whoever's being deployed.
Definitely. And our crews know where our target hazards are. We do a lot of walkthroughs on certain places, like the Chevron plant. That way we know where things are. That way we kind of don't go in there blind, not knowing where the services are.
Things that could go boom.
Yeah, exactly. Things that could go boom. Bigger entities, I should say.
See, I've been reading the tech manual, too.
Yeah.
The boom category.
Yeah, things that we just want to make sure that our crews are safe going into places that could pose a risk to them.
What is the most surprising, for most of us, flammable item in a garage, in a business, in a house that you guys go, oh, it's been there for 25 years.
Yeah, we do see a lot of, old propane cylinders. And it could be, from your barbecue, it could be from your camp stove, whatever it is.
Where do you get rid of those things?
Hazardous waste will take them if you take them into your local,
Okay, self-confessing. We got one out here.
Yeah.
Tried three different places and they won't take it.
Interesting.
No, pain in the butt is what it is.
It is definitely a pain in the butt, for sure. And people want to make sure that they're disposing of these things properly.
Yeah, otherwise it's like what we've got. It just kind of sits outside.
Definitely.
Sits outside.
Yeah, we try to give people the right resources for that.
Well, good. I'll walk out with you then. particularly if the thing's empty. It's not going to, but it's still.
Yep, needs to be handled properly. There's still vapors in there.
Yeah.
And the vapors are what we're afraid of. For sure.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe it's been open for so long, there's nothing there.
We'd hope
But regardless. No, that would require planning, and that's my long suit. All right. You made it through.
Awesome.
Congratulations. Hopefully you like this new water. I'm not sure.
It's interesting.
Mojito. Okay, fine.
Breakfast mojito.
Yeah, woohoo! See everybody on Monday.